Hello, it's the year 2024. It's me, Matt Stewart, and we've sold out all four of our Do Go Ons live at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. But if you want to see me, you can do that. The show's called Dry Dryer, and we're at a new venue now. It's called The Grace Darling. Me and Sarenjaya Marnett, it's so much fun. The show's getting real good, I reckon. It's been heaps of fun, so we'd love to see you there. Use the discount code Do Go On for cheaper tickets. Also, we've now got the Do Go On quiz show. It's up online on the Stupid Old channel, so please check it out. Getting some lovely feedback so far. Please give it a watch, subscribe to the channel, maybe even comment on it, and, you know, feed those algorithm gods if you can. But love to see a Dry Dryer in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane. Check out the quiz show. Anyway, let's get on with this show.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Do Go On. This is the show where we talk about a thing and then we all chat about it as well. I'm starting to miss Dave.
Yeah.
He's very good at the opening bit.
You're doing better, but he is much better at it.
It's my right-hand man. It's Jess Perkins.
Hello, Matt Stewart. You didn't introduce yourself either. Hi, Matt Stewart.
Jeez Louise. I know. This is a tricky gig.
He's missed.
To be honest, I'm playing it up like just to make Dave, if he's out there listening, I just wanted him to think that we miss him.
I haven't noticed.
I'm right here, guys.
Oh!
Hiding underneath the table the whole time. Yes, the man with the golden tonsils, as I describe myself, is back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Do Go On. I'm going to start the intro again because of Matt's effort there.
Jeez, the man with the golden tonsils is peaking the audio there. Well, he's been a bit too enthusiastic.
Well, the man with the golden tonsils was just playing with what he thought was a piece of blue tack on the table, but then mint started coming out of it, and I realized that it's someone's discarded chewing gum.
Ew.
Oh, God.
Really?
Yeah, that's right there.
That's a brand new table.
I was going to say, this table hasn't been here very long at all.
It's the brand new studio. Usually it's a custom for people to put the gum under the table if they have to dispose of it, but on the table so that I can play with.
The only people who've been in here so far, Dave Callan, his sensei, and Auntie Donna.
Oh, I blame sensei. Sensei,
I'm
going
Auntie Donna for sure. Interesting. We went different routes.
We cast this version.
But okay. Hey, Dave, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, guys. It's so good to be back after my
school.
Yeah, how was school?
Anything? Sorry. Heil Warnicky.
Well, I did listen to the episodes that were recorded whilst I was away, and let me tell you that I was in no way at any of the Nazi camps that were mentioned about 600 or 700 times in the last episode. I was driving my car going, no.
Not Nazi camps, Nazi university.
Yeah, there's a difference, Dave.
I was in no Nazi-based institutions.
Okay, well, that's fine. I mean,
agree to disagree.
You don't have anything to prove that, but okay.
Well, I've got many photos of me with pies all around Europe.
Yeah, you've got your priorities right.
That's right.
I love
that's
it.
Right. But it is good to be back. Have you been well without the golden tonsils?
Well.
Stop calling yourself that.
It hasn't been the same. It's been nice though because we have had a couple of guests come on, which has been very nice of them to come and hang out with us, and people have really enjoyed their presence.
That is,
I don't know how that makes you feel.
Depressing. Mm. I have had Broden Kelly and Nick Mason killed, so they will not be coming back.
Fair enough. That means there's an opening in Auntie Donna. Now it's Perkins' time to shine. I know all their sketches.
I've also killed the other two members of Auntie Donna. Just so that there's no possible way they could replace me in the future.
Wow. All right.
Smart play.
You got to strike first.
Yeah. Okay. We need to talk about that after the show, maybe. But I'm a little bit worried about you now.
But I did have a bit of time, obviously, away to think about my actions in the last episode I recorded when I talked about Riverdance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Don't bring up that.
Totally. I mean...
You broke Jess's heart.
It's in the past.
But you, Jess, I don't think you've mentioned that you actually saw Riverdance since that last episode.
I haven't actually talked about that. No. I did say it and it was amazing. I was sitting in the theater and I was like, all right, here we go. Whatever. I've seen this before. No big deal. And I think you'd gotten in my head. I was like, this is pretty lame. Like, what is going on here? And then the lights went down and the music started. I got a little bit teary. I was like, no, it's still magical. It was great. I really enjoyed it.
So you cried at the start?
Yeah.
Always a hallmark of a high piece of art.
Normally people don't cry until they realize that they've paid money to see the dancing, which normally happens after it starts. But
yeah.
No, that's a joke. I'm not Warnockying this.
Yeah, I'm just going to say completely silent.
Smart decision.
I regret everything I said on that episode.
Good thing is I don't think you can really tease me for my topic today.
Great.
Do you know what I mean?
You're not passionately...
No.
Not passionate about this topic?
I'm not passionate about this topic. It's fascinating.
Is it from the hat?
It is from the hat.
That gets you excited, Matt.
Of course it does. The hat is so full. We need to work through the hat.
I don't remember the time we haven't... Oh, Riverdance wasn't in the hat. But apart from that, recently...
Planespotting wasn't.
Okay. Not well played.
Two of the last three.
No, never mind. Sorry. Yep. Stupid point, Perkins.
But I mean, we didn't allow Broden to put his hand in the hat.
No, well, yuck.
You can't see the hat.
No, you can't see
the hat. I don't know where his hands have been.
Dirty
I know
boy.
Where mine have been on, dirty on Broden's chewing gums. Disgusting. Though my hands do smell minty fresh, everyone. it's quite a balance between disgusting and beautiful.
It really does look like blue tack, though.
It does.
It does. I reckon it is.
I'm not convinced it's...
Minty blue tack.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? That can be a thing.
Sure is. Hey, so Dave, I don't know if you might be a bit rusty, but we normally kick off the show with a bit of a question
mm-hmm.
by the report writer, and that's going to have something to do with the topic at hand.
Yeah.
And then you and I will deliberate, we'll answer. I'll probably get it right, and mm-hmm. you'll probably fumble about like a little Nazi fool.
Go on.
And then we'll get cracking on the show. That's how it works. You have been away a couple of weeks, so it's good to have you back.
Mm.
It's good to be back.
I feel calmer in your presence.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the captain of the ship is back.
Yeah.
The
Titanic.
Dad's back is what I'm saying. Dad's back.
Good to have you back,
but
Dad.
Does this dad have golden tonsils?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Golden tonsil boy. Little golden
boy. Golden boy tonsil dad. Reporting for duty as your captain. the captain came in reporting for duty. Everyone's like, no.
You don't have to report. We report to you.
Well, very well. Very good. Go on.
I didn't write a question.
Okay, great. Well, you could have used that fluff time there that Matt and I created.
I could have, yes. But instead I thought, no, I'm going to be honest with our listeners because they're our friends. I lie to the listeners. I will be honest and say this one's been put together rather frantically and recently. So a little change up. Normally I really put so much effort in. But you know what's interesting is that nobody ever corrects us. And I don't mean to invite that. Don't. But I would have thought, considering...
It is surprising that we've never had even... we've only ever had one person complain that you got a date wrong about the Beatles early on. But
apart from that...
49 episodes. People... I honestly thought that we would get every week about 10 people going, well, actually, it was October the 7th, not the 8th.
Well, actually, it was this person
that
did
this. Well, you
know
why that is, though. It's because we're bloody bang on every time.
That's right.
Exactly. We are inviting it now, aren't we? But
I think our listeners are just on board with the fact that we're just telling a story-ish.
Yeah, that's right. We don't claim to be a professor in the field.
No, I'm not don't use this for you.
I mean, you are a professor of podcasting, aren't you?
Right. Yeah, doctor of podcasting.
So, well, if I do my time, I could work my way up to be a professor.
I would have thought, is professor above doctor?
Oh, definitely.
Really?
Yeah, at a university, you become associate professor and then you become full professor.
Oh, hello.
Hmm.
Wowzers.
And when do you become a doctor at university?
Once you've done your doctorate, which you do before you're a professor,
that's
I understand.
Right. But then after a professor, you become a mister. No, that's not true. It's like, you know, a surgeon.
Surgeons.
And then you become a master. And then you become a pilot. And then you become a small child.
Mm-hmm. Benjamin Button style.
And the cycle starts again.
Pilot. I was a pilot in my teen years, so that's how I was just working backwards in my...
Yeah.
It's the circle of tertiary education.
Anyway, the question, gentlemen, is who is the creepiest man in American history?
H.H. Holmes.
No, we've already done him.
Michael Jackson.
No.
The creepiest.
Thinking more along...
Are they a serial killer? Because we'd get a lot of serial killer suggestions. Oh, no.
The Zodiac killer?
I just realized I was nodding on a podcast.
It's actually very disturbing how many people tweet in saying, do more serial killer episodes. Like, it's... I'd say probably 20 different people have requested serial killer topics.
I agree that that's disturbing, but then I was like, yes. Because this is a topic I wrote down when we started this podcast that I wanted to do. And I was like, it's a bit dark. I don't know if I can do it. And then somebody's put it in the hat. I'm like, well, got to give the people what they want. It's not the Zodiac Killer.
Is it, let's think of the famous one. John Wayne Gacy.
No.
I'm out.
Thinking a little bit culty as well.
Culty. Oh, the guy.
Oh, Charles Manson.
Boom.
Oh, and he's got swastikas on his head, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Tattooed on his head.
Yeah, that's true.
Just like Davey Warnicky.
I do not have a swastika tattooed anywhere on my body.
It's on his butt.
It's not on my butt.
It's in his butt.
It's in his butt.
I only get tattoos as cute things like zebras. That's it.
Yeah, it's a bit cute.
Nazi zebras.
Charles Manson. Wow.
Charles Manson. I've always been a little bit fascinated by Charles Manson. I mean, I think a lot of people are. It's sort of like a lot of serial killers.
No, I must admit that I am fascinated by serial killers, but then I lie awake at night going, why did I read that entire wiki article?
Exactly. And any type of... and just this one's so interesting because he created this cult following. And I'm always so fascinated with how somebody can have that level of charm and convince people to sort of believe them and follow them and do awful things for them.
I think it just comes naturally to some people. For example, the man with the golden tonsils.
I would not kill anybody for you.
Really? What if they were harming me?
If they're harming you.
Thank you. Good.
I'd defend you because you'd need it, damsel in distress.
Matt, would you kill for me?
What's the scenario?
Somebody's trying to hurt
you.
I just
said, can you kill for me?
No.
Probably not.
No.
Well, I mean, what? Have I had some drinks?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've had
a couple of beers in the footy.
You're very suggestible after a few drinks.
Are you paying him? Because Matt and I are both quite broke at the moment.
Super poor.
So is there money up for grabs or old money bags, golden tonsils over there?
Are you advertising your services as a hitman?
No, I'm just asking for more context in the situation where you're asking us to murder for you.
Yeah. I don't think you're not really a cult leader. You have to pay. That's the difference, I think.
Okay.
If you don't have to pay...
Oh,
you're
you
won't.
Nah, I'm not following you in a cult.
Yeah,
Dave.
I'm so sorry, Dave. You are no Charles Manson. Sorry, buddy.
Well, in many ways, I'm disappointed.
I don't think you should be. This one was suggested by Corey Cavender. It was at Caveman Curry on Twitter. So thanks, Corey.
Caveman Curry.
That sounds delicious.
It does, doesn't it?
Cavender? I'm sorry if I said that wrong, Corey. So thank you for suggesting.
Thank you, Corey, you sick bastard.
Thank you, Corey. No, it's awesome, because like I said, this is one of the first things I wrote down in my little notes.
So when we invited you to be part of the podcast, you instantly thought, Charles Manson.
Not...
an excuse to research him.
I wasn't like, I got a message from Matt Stewart. What's this? A podcast. Charles Manson. No, it wasn't quite that quick. But
is it like a passion for you, like Riverdance is? Charles Manson and the Manson family?
It's not a passion.
You did. Your first topic was the Beatles, right?
Yeah.
And this is a little, it's like some little Beatles relation here.
Which I wasn't actually fully aware of. I'd heard bits, but it's interesting that it does sort of tie in. So, yeah, there you go.
Beatles kind of ties in with everything.
That's true.
But also, what about the Beach Boys? We're going to talk about
them. The Beach Boys, yes. The Beach Boys are mentioned.
Very cool.
There's, he's a strange and terrifying person. So, this one's going to be nice and light and super fun.
Great.
Good luck finding some comedy in this one, boys. But it's not my fault. I'm the presenter. Corey's fault. Thanks, Corey. Bye.
Caveman Curry.
So I'll start with a little bit of a backstory of Charles Manson. Maybe we can have a look into, you know, the psychology of this person.
I'm sure. I think you're about to tell us he had a great childhood. I'm confident.
Yeah, that's what's weird. He had like heaps of siblings and they all had a great time. He had an excellent education. Loving parents. I'm lying, Dave.
Oh.
You cannot pick sarcasm sometimes.
Is any of that true?
Your little face is just like, bluh.
But why would they lie?
None of that is true. So he was born in 1934 to an unmarried 16-year-old named Kathleen Maddox in Ohio, where a lot of our listeners are from. most of our listeners are from. Yeah,
shout out to Ohio.
Hi, Ohio.
Where all the great serial killers of history have been born.
Just if any of you were also born at the General Hospital in Cincinnati, congrats. You're in the same hospital as Charles Manson, so add that to your resume.
Imagine if you put that on the resume.
Yeah,
in brackets.
Same hospital.
Charlie Manson was born here.
No big deal. Whatever. Pretty cool.
I should be the CEO of your company.
Charlie Manson, or have you just given him a cute nickname?
No, people.
Well, Dave tends to sympathise with his kind of people.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
people jokingly do call him Charlie Manson.
Right.
Not jokingly. If your name's Charles, I'm sure you'll get called Charlie.
It's a very good joke.
It's a good joke. It's like how I get called Jess. Hilarious.
Oh, that is good.
Well,
my name's Jessica.
If you were if you were a scary person, it might be a little funnier.
Oh, okay. So Charlie's kind of endearing.
Context is all.
Okay, no, fair enough. But originally, though, he was named No Name Maddox. He wasn't named for a while.
Oh.
Is that the default? No name.
I don't know. Well, I don't think she wrote down on his birth certificate No Name, but he was.
Home brand.
In the hospital, they probably would just called them Baby Maddox or No Name or something. You know? Anyway. And within a few weeks, he was named Charles Miles Maddox.
Maddox is a nice name.
Maddox is cool.
One of the Brangelina's kids.
Yes, Maddox. Very good. Oh, topical.
That's right.
Bloody, I tell you what, if they can't make it work, none of us can.
Yeah.
Hey? Yeah. Going to stay single and lonely forever, I'll tell you that for sure. Yeah. It's the only way to know.
So you're going to start telling relatives at family gatherings?
Yeah.
So you're still single, Jess? Brangelina didn't work out, so yes.
Yeah, like, yes, Auntie That's Rose. Right. Of course I am. God, stop asking. How about you just assume and I'll tell you when it's not the case?
Yeah.
Now, for a period after Charles's birth, his mother was married to a labourer named William Manson. So that's where he got his surname, Manson. His biological father, it's kind of disputed, but it appears to be Colonel Walker Scott. But again, he never knew his biological father, and there's been arguments as to who his real father was. So we're not 100% sure.
I feel like Colonel Walker Scott probably would have said, no, it wasn't me.
It wasn't me. Because he's like Shaggy.
But if he'd become a billionaire, he probably would have said he was
Yeah, he's
my
mine.
Son.
Yeah, he's mine. Yep.
It's funny that, isn't it?
That's my boy.
Yeah, it's funny. Isn't that funny?
I mean, I think most fatherless children either go one way or the other. Billionaire, serial killer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's usually the case.
That is true.
Is that a fact?
That is 100% fact.
Okay.
So like the dispute about his father, there's a lot of his early life that we don't have a lot of answers for because of the varying stories that he's offered in interviews over the years. So nobody really knows exactly what his sort of situation was. His mother was allegedly a heavy drinker, and based on future things that sort of happened, that kind of makes sense. But just because he spent a lot of time in foster care and in and out of juvenile hall and stuff like that. So she wasn't great. She wasn't a great mum. Because apparently once she sold her son for a pitcher of beer to a childless waitress.
A picture of beer?
Pitcher.
How disappointing would that be? I'll trade you for that beer. All right, brings it over. Oh, it's a photo.
Not again.
Got to have another one.
Every time. For a jug of beer, Matthew.
What happened to the... Did he stay with the waitress?
No, his uncle had to go and get him a few days later. But he still stayed with the waitress for a few days because mum was like, free beer. Yeah, right.
Mum's at home going, good trade. Good trade.
Worth it.
Do that again in a second.
Beer never nags me. So it's pretty bad. So his mother and her brother were sentenced to 5 years imprisonment for robbing a service station in West Virginia in 1939 by brandishing a ketchup bottle.
Stand back or I'll squirt.
It's a squeezy bottle. It's not even glass.
Amazing.
Oh no, I'm wearing white.
No, I've got to go to work after this.
I'm already at work. I work at the service station.
So they went to, they were
5 years is a bit much. Like, surely the judge would laugh that one out of court.
Well,
is that rubbing? Like,
well, if they got away with stuff. Who knows? They may have had other weapons, but they certainly had a ketchup bottle. I think in this situation, the better.
They forgot to mention that she was holding a hand grenade.
Yeah, as well.
Hand grenade. Yeah. Yeah, that's which, Hand grenade at a petrol station is a pretty dangerous combo,
yeah, Matt. Yeah, Matt.
Add sauce point. In there.
That is a good point.
I like to think that maybe she ordered a meat pie and then they asked her to pay for sauce, and that was a little too much.
No, fair enough.
She grabbed her own bottle off the shelf.
I hate paying for sauce.
It's ridiculous.
Bloody bullshit.
But I mean, what? Why is that bullshit? It's like you pay for everything else.
But it should come with the sauce.
So you should it should just be factored in.
Oh, I really, but then, thought, yeah, factor I really it in. Thought you'd be on side here.
Yeah, Matt, you're such an Aussie bloke.
You're such an Aussie bloke.
You're a battler.
You should be like,
you should get as much sauce as you want, mate.
Sure, but
you're
I mean,
a drover.
Why are we paying for your sauce?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I don't think those...
Who's we? You don't have
the
sauce.
The taxpayers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's some
I'm very conservative.
There's a rebate from the government on sauce.
Anyway.
It does feel like, because someone doesn't want sauce, right? So they have to, they just factor that 10 cents into the price. And then everyone's paying for sauce either way. But you don't want sauce.
No, but it's never 10 cents. It's usually like 30 or 50
yeah.
cents.
What I think they should have is those communal bottles.
I'm so okay
nah,
with the communal bottles.
I don't like the communal
nah,
bottles.
Yeah, because you hate sharing, you bloody right-wing bastard. No sauce for anyone.
Really picked a weird character today.
yeah, it's weird that you're against this.
Yeah.
Usually you're like, no, fuck the patriarchy.
And it's me that turns on things, but you've turned on sauce.
And also the little packages are like way shitter for the environment than a communal bottle. But that's what I'm
so
about.
So now you're
fuck
onto
the environment and pay
fuck you commies. Yeah.
yeah. Commies. Free sauce is quite communist. It really is.
Yeah. Sauce for all. Anyway, can I go on?
Sure.
Text in what you think.
yeah. Free sauce. Hashtag free sauce.
Is this a problem overseas? In Ohio, do you have sauce?
Ketchup?
If you get a hot dog.
Nice.
Should you pay for sauce?
Ketchup.
Ketchup. Sorry. Yeah. They've been Googling what tomato sauce means over in America.
Like, what is sauce?
What does tomato sauce mean in America? Ketchup is a more fun word.
Ketchup's a bit different to our tomato sauce anyway.
Oh, is it?
Ketchup's like a bit more sweeter. Vinegary and sweet. Yeah, it's good. It's good. Tomato sauce is, I mean, it's the best thing that's ever existed, but.
I'm drinking a little cup of it now.
Anyway, so. Mum's in prison.
Rightfully so. No, I don't think she should be in prison.
Sorry to hear that, Jess. My mum's in prison. Can I go on with the podcast? No, my mum is a saint. Annie would never do anything that would put her in prison. Also, if she went to prison, oh my God, she'd be someone's bitch within seconds. Wow. And probably like willingly, she'd be like, do you want me to wash your socks for you? Like, can I help you? She's so lovely.
You have a strange misunderstanding of what prison bitch means.
No, I know. Yeah. No, she'd probably be like everybody's... I really don't want to imagine the situation because, as I said, she's a delight. Now, when Manson's mum was paroled from prison that she was in, unlike my mum, who's an angel, she was paroled in 1942. She retrieved her son from the aunt and uncle that he was living with and she lived with him in a series of run-down hotel rooms. Manson himself later remembered her physical embrace of him on the day she returned from prison as his sole happy childhood memory. The only good memory he has is the hug when his mum got out of prison. Oh boy.
I imagine it would cost a lot more to live in several even shit hotels and just rent in one small apartment.
Okay, Dave.
Financially, there's a lot of questions here. And if people had free sauce... There wouldn't be any Charles Mansons in the world, that's all I'm saying.
Wow. It's a real mic drop on that one. I mean, you can't drop the mic because they're attached to the table. And
well, I could pull a Broden Kelly and rip it off.
yeah, which one was that? It's this one, wasn't it? It's the one I'm at because there's a hole there. Fucking Kelly. That will be invoicing you, mate. Anyway... in 1947, Kathleen Maddox tried to have her son placed in a foster home, but failed because no such home was available. So
she was trying. Usually, it's people are trying to take them away.
Yeah, but she's like, I can't take. I don't know the reason why, but let's assume she was like, I can't take care of him. She's trying to put him in foster home. There's nowhere available. There's nobody can take him. So
I think she wanted them to also have beer involved in the trade somehow.
Probably. And they're like, no, that's not how it works.
Child services were not up for that.
So he was placed in a school for boys in Indiana. And after 10 months, he fled there to be with his mother, but she rejected him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So he's only, this is 1947, and he's only like 13 at this point.
Oh, my God. Mm.
So then he burglarizes a liquor store and that way he sort of gets some money to rent a room, and he commits a string of burglaries of other stores.
Using what weapon?
Look, who knows?
Mustard.
It's burglaries.
Colonel not... Mustard in the study with the mustard.
He stole a bicycle, and he was eventually caught in the act and sent to an Indianapolis juvenile center. He escaped after one day, but was recaptured and placed in Boys Town, which is like a boys' home.
Sounds like a boy band.
I know. I thought that too. Boys and then Town. It made me look up Boys Town, Boy Town, which was the Australian film. Oh, that's right.
There
film.
Was a film called Boy Town.
Yeah, I looked that up.
Mick Malloy,
Bob Franklin,
Wayne Hope.
Ah, oh, so good.
Very good.
Very fun. So I was watching that trailer on YouTube for a bit, and then I went back to researching. So check that out if you want to. It's pretty funny. Or don't. I don't care.
I saw it at the movies. I remember.
Did you?
Was it good?
Yeah, at the time I really enjoyed it. It's like 12 years ago or something, so right. I can't really remember it that well.
I remember it, but it wasn't, I don't think it was well loved by the critics, because it was kind of the follow-up to Crackerjack.
Film not loved by the critics?
Crackerjack went off, right? Everyone loved it.
Crackerjack was good.
Yeah, but then I think people were disappointed by Boy Town. But I can't remember. With that cast, how could you go wrong? I love Wayne Hope so much.
Yeah, Wayne Hope is very funny.
Oh, Wayne Hope's great. They're all great. Bob Franklin.
Oh, look, that's all of them.
The man, the legend.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, 4 days after he arrived at Boys Town, not the band, he escaped with another boy, and the pair committed 2 armed robberies on their way to the home of the other boy's uncle. So they're like, hey, let's just go stay at my uncle's place. Do you want to rob some stuff on the way? Yeah, all right. So they were caught during the second of the break-ins. It was at a grocery store. And Manson was sent to the Indiana Boys School, where he would later claim that he was sexually and physically abused. So he's not having a great time in life. He's only 13 still. After many failed attempts, he escaped with 2 other boys in 1951. So by now he's 17. In Utah, the 3 were caught driving to California in cars that they'd stolen.
They got a convoy. They don't get into one.
Yeah,
they get into 3.
Maybe there's 2 cars.
They drive like side by side. It's pretty easy to get pulled over.
Yeah, it's like you can't do that. Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry. So they'd robbed several petrol stations along the way. Now, for the federal crime of taking a stolen car across a state line, Manson was sent to Washington, D.C.'s National Training School for Boys. And despite having like 4 years of schooling and an IQ of 109, where he was tested later, 109 being pretty average, like a fairly good intelligence. Not incredible, but not...
Is 100 average? Is that right? Is that how the scale works?
I think so. I googled like 100 and IQ of 109, and it's pretty average. Pretty normal.
He has been accepted into many schools.
So yeah. Many schools. They're not the nicest schools. They're like juvenile centres, but they're still schools.
And several boy band academies. Mm. So he's clearly very talented.
He's got that. But what they're saying is despite like having not much schooling but still having an okay IQ, he was illiterate.
So he's kind of choosing not to learn, really.
Yeah, well, I suppose like nobody really paid attention to him to teach him. Oh, don't sympathise with him, Jess. No, I don't care.
Oh, how could you not so far?
Yeah,
fucking
it's pretty
hell.
Horrible
oh,
so
yeah.
far.
No, but I'm like, because we know what he goes on to do, I shouldn't
well,
really
I
be like,
I
what
don't
a poor
know.
Kid. Anyway, a caseworker deemed him aggressively antisocial, and I kind of looked up antisocial personality disorder. It's a personality disorder characterized by a pervasive pattern of disregard for or violation of the rights of others. So it's like no sense, moral sense or conscious is often apparent, as well as a history of crime, legal problems and or impulsive and aggressive behavior. So that kind of makes sense.
So, okay, not giving a fuck.
No fucks given.
that was the my diagnosis. No fucks given.
And then he puts on his sunnies.
Yes. It drives away.
In October of 1951, on a psychiatrist's recommendation, Manson was transferred to Natural Bridge Honor Camp, which was a minimum security institution.
Oh, no, he's graduating with honors.
Wow.
Yep.
They give these places quite nice names also, like academy.
Yeah, they sound nice.
Honor Institute, but
camp,
really it's a jail.
Yeah.
It's a prison.
It's a minimum security institution, yeah.
And hasn't he escaped like 12 times? Why is he in minimum security?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yep.
Is he going to get away again?
Well, less than a month before a scheduled parole hearing, One of the boys there apparently took a razor blade and held it against another boy's throat while Manson sexually assaulted him. So he's got a month before he's paroled. And he attacked somebody in the prison. So he was then transferred to the federal reformatory in Virginia, where he was considered dangerous. Oh, do you reckon? Do you reckon he might be a bit dangerous? We could have maybe picked up on that a little while ago. Okay. Maybe don't put him in minimum security. He was then, in September of 52, so like a bit later that year, he'd had a number of serious disciplinary offences, and so they transferred him again to a different federal reformatory in Ohio. Shout out to Ohio.
Back to Ohio. That's right. Maybe you've been to the same reformatory.
Hey, tweet in.
Boytown Academy for Excellence.
It was a more secure institution, so a bit more high security.
So like the paparazzi can't come in and take photos of the young superstars of tomorrow.
Just while he's trying to learn.
Jazz, tap and ballet.
Yeah, he's got classes, guys.
Triple threat.
You gotta be.
He's quite triple threatening to other people in the prison.
Oh, boy. Now, what's interesting, though, is about a month after the transfer, he became almost a model resident. Like, he behaved himself. So he
started modelling as well.
He started modelling.
Wow, he's amazing.
Quadruple threat. He's got it all. He's got the look.
How has he transformed?
He had just had good work habits. There was a rise in his educational level from, like, a lower fourth grade sort of level to seventh grade.
In 1 month?
In a couple of years.
All right, sorry.
Meant that a couple of years later, in 1954, he was granted parole. So he's now 20 and he's finally out. So he spent most of his like childhood in and out of foster homes, family homes and institutions.
Right.
So he temporarily... so the parole condition was that he had to live with his aunt and uncle in West Virginia, and he did that for a while until eventually he moved in with his mother, who was also in West Virginia. And in 1955, he married a hospital waitress named Rosalie Jean Willis, with whom, by his own account, he found genuine, if short-lived, marital happiness. So he's happy, he's married, he supported their marriage via small-time jobs and auto theft, but he had jobs.
And theft.
And sold some cars. Oh, no, Charlie. And around October, about 3 months after he and his pregnant wife had arrived in Los Angeles in a car he had stolen in Ohio, he was again charged with the federal crime of taking a vehicle across state lines. But after a psychiatric evaluation, he was given 5 years probation. So it's like you're not going to prison, but you've just got to behave yourself. But he failed to appear at a Los Angeles hearing on an identical charge filed in Florida. So then he's arrested in Indianapolis. It's just a mess. His probation's revoked. He's sentenced to 3 years imprisonment at Terminal Island in California. Terminal Island. Does that sound fun to you, Dave?
That one sounds less fun. I've got to say, Terminal Island. You couldn't even call it a boy band album that.
No, you could. Terminal Island.
NSYNC, Terminal Island.
Oh, it's not terrible,
maybe,
actually.
Do you think?
Yeah, I'd listen to that.
Bye-bye.
I feel like maybe the bad boy of the boy band, like his hometown could be Terminal Island.
Yeah.
In his fictional backstory.
Yeah, that works. Otherwise, not so good. While Charles is in prison, Rosalie gave birth to their son, Charles Manson Jr., during his first year. Not a good name.
Bet he changes his name.
Yep. First year at Terminal Island. And they visit, and his mum visits, because, you know, his wife and mother are living together in Los Angeles. In March of 1957, when the visits from his wife stopped, his mum informed him that Rosalie was living with another man. And less than 2 weeks before a parole hearing, Manson tried to escape by stealing a car. How did he try to escape? Okay, he escaped and stole a car somehow. So then he's given 5 years probation, his parole's denied. So every time it gets close to him getting out, he acts out, which is a little bit strange.
It's almost like he doesn't want to leave Terminal Island.
Yeah, well, there was...
I mean, such a great place. Also, it'd be very difficult to drive a car off an island, I imagine.
I'm picturing it like a fun fair, like a, you know, like Coney Island or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I thought I had it written down, but there was some sort of point where, I don't remember exactly where it was, but he did ask to stay.
Yeah, right. So that must be nice. That.
You must have enjoyed running the roller coaster.
Terminal, that's where you go to at a, like to leave somewhere, right? You go to the terminal.
Yeah, like airports, terminal ferry fall. Terminals.
You just want to leave the terminal.
That's fair enough. I like terminals sometimes.
It's fun.
There's some good cafes there.
Yeah, I associate them with
it
good
would,
times.
It would feel like you're constantly about to go somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
I'm about to leave this terminal.
And it's all about, you know, like the anticipation. That's what life's all about in the end.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. Yeah. I get why he's into that. Oh, this is the saddest story I've ever heard.
It's pretty sad. No, it's a good for a comedy podcast.
I feel like it's going to get better before it gets worse. I mean, the other way around.
So, finally, he receives 5 years parole in September of 1958, which is the same year that Rosalie filed for divorce from him. By November, he was pimping a 16-year-old girl and was receiving additional support from a girl with wealthy parents. So
he must be very charming, I must say.
He must be. He must be. It's terrifying. It's so creepy.
Was he good looking when he's younger? Because I only see him looking crazy.
Oh, yeah, but that's the thing. He's got the crazy eyes. He's got, like, dead eyes. And, like, how do you not pick up on that? How do you go, ooh.
Just don't look him in the face.
Oh, he's dreamy. No, he's terrifying.
Nightmarish.
Yeah.
Look at his legs go. Jazz, tap, and ballet. Ooh, what a combo.
He received a 10-year suspended sentence after he pleaded guilty to a charge of attempting to cash a forged check.
That's a long suspended sentence.
10-year suspended sentence,
I know. You get given 10 years and then they're like, no, we'll suspend that.
Well, they suspended it because a young woman with an arrest record for prostitution made a tearful plea before the court that she and Manson were deeply in love and would marry if Charlie was freed.
Oh.
But so that kind of stuff only happened in movies.
I know, so they're like, oh, well, if he wants to get married, we can't let him go to
how
prison.
How strange is that?
Just so fucking weird, right? So,
the judge is a... He loved love.
Hey, who doesn't?
It's true.
Love must prevail.
Who doesn't?
Love conquers all.
So, before the year's end, she did marry him, possibly so testimony against him would not be required of her, like, later, because you can't testify against your spouse.
Oh.
What, can't you?
No, I'm sure you can. I don't
I'd know. Like to... Marry everyone.
Then
no,
Dave. No
one can say anything.
No, Dave, you can't do that.
Come on.
Also, what are people going to say about it? What are you hiding?
I don't know. I just want to know that I'm covered.
What do you mean, what is he hiding? He's a Nazi.
Oh, no. Stop that. It used to be implied that you thought I was some sort of Nazi. Now you just say it to my face. And I will not sit here and take that from you. I'm in no way a Nazi, supporter of Nazi ideology, or a fan of anything Nazis have ever done.
Right. Well, that's weird.
Just to set the record straight. It feels very strange that I have to publicly say this.
But Hitler wasn't that bad, was he,
Dave? No one else has to come out and say, I'm not into Nazism. I have to do that because of you two.
Well, because you said that Hitler wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Wasn't... Go back and listen to what I say. It's an early episode... We're just working out who we were as people.
Yeah, true. I'm still not sure.
Do I?
There was no context. You just came out of nowhere and said, look, guys, I've got to get this off my chest.
We're talking about the
Hitler
Beatles.
Hitler wasn't that bad.
Welcome to Do Go On. Yeah. My name's Dave Warnicky. Hitler wasn't that bad.
Joining me. My new catchphrase. The man with the golden tonsils.
Cowabunga. Hitler wasn't that bad.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I love how you're not even giving it the context anymore. You're just like, go listen to it.
Yeah, go listen. Because I sound, if I dispute it too much, I sound like she doth protest too much. Does that make sense to you, Matt?
No, it doesn't.
Highbrow?
No, I think that Shakespeare quote is actually misinterpreted now over the years. So
yeah.
How you said it then isn't quite right. But that's okay. You're a young fella. You'll find your way.
Do you want to correct me then, please?
No. Go look it up yourself.
Hmm. For a wise old man, he doesn't like to share his wisdom, does he?
He does not. He does not.
Oh, it's just a pile on everybody today.
And
do me, next? Do me.
And Jess has an IQ of 108, less than Charles Manson.
No! Yes. I wonder what mine would be. Can we do IQ tests and find out if we're smarter than Charles Manson?
Oh, my God. So I'd actually like to, but I'd also be afraid that I'd be a lot dumber than I think.
Yeah.
No, I reckon let's do it.
Let's do it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether it's your first ever website or your business is expanding, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website and engage with your audience.
Jess, before jumping, Dave, can you say entrepreneurs again? It sounds so good.
Entrepreneurs.
Oh my God.
God, he's good.
Jeez.
If it feels a bit overwhelming to start your own website, don't worry. You can get help with written content on your website with Squarespace AI. Generating instant, personalized results that know and show your brand identity. You explain what your site's about, you choose your tone, you enter what you need, and you get short and long form text. How cool is that?
Oh my God, can Squarespace just do my life?
It would be good if it could do my taxes.
Hey, you can easily manage your clients and invoices. Two things that I definitely have, from vetting leads to receiving payment via invoices in one streamlined and customizable workflow.
Sorry, Matt, can you pronounce streamlined for me again?
Streamlined.
Beautiful.
Was that closer?
Yeah, in that it was the word.
Okay.
And not streamlined. You can also sell exclusive content on your site by adding a paywall to sell membership or courses, or you can sell files that your customers can download, like PDFs, music, ebooks.
Right, Jess, can I just get you to say the word courses again?
Courses.
Nailed it. Head to squarespace.com/dogoon for a free trial and to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/dogoon.
Oh my God.
Anyway, I'll go on. So the woman that he married, her name was Leona, and as a prostitute, she'd use the name Candy Stevens. Candy, oh, great name.
Stevens is very unsexy and unoriginal, I got to say. You start with Candy, you should be like Candy Good Times with a Z.
Good times. Now, after Manson took her and another woman from California to New Mexico for purposes of prostitution, he was held and questioned for violation of the Mann Act, which is like White Slave Traffic Act. So they questioned him for that, but he was released. But he sort of suspected correctly that the investigation hadn't ended, like that they would be wanting to ask more questions. So he disappeared in violation of his probation, and a warrant was issued. And when one of the women was arrested for prostitution, Manson was returned to L.A. And for violation of his probation on the check cashing charge, he was ordered to serve his 10-year sentence. So then he's released on the 21st of March in 1967, and he received permission to move to San Francisco, where, with the help of a prison acquaintance, he moved into an apartment in Berkeley. And in prison, he'd met a bank robber, Alvin Karpis, and Alvin had taught him to play the steel guitar. Ooh.
Ooh.
Maybe that's how he gets all the ladies, because
he knows the steel guitar.
He can play guitar. So he soon gets to know a lady called Mary Brunner, who's a 23-year-old graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She was working as a library assistant at the University of California, and Manson moved in with her.
Well, she sounds so innocent.
She does. Like, she's a library assistant. She's a graduate.
Is she bookish?
Well, yeah.
I thought she'd
She's pretty bookish. So he moves in with her, and according to a second-hand account, he overcame her resistance to his bringing other women in to live with them. So she's kind of like, well, I thought maybe just you and I could live in my place. And he's like, nah, let's bring other people in. And before long,
overcame that resistance, like it's some sort of triumph.
Yeah, yeah, bullying people.
Against adversity.
Yeah, that's right.
Before long, they were just sharing her place with 18 other women. So
18 other women?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand, like, the logistics of that seem out of control.
So bunk beds?
How many beds are there? Yeah.
I don't know.
What
Dave?
About the John? There'd be a line at all times.
Sure. At all times.
At all times.
We always have to line up.
Oh, we?
Women.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant you were in the house. You were one of the 18 or 19 women.
No, women. Women always have to line up. I live in a house with one other person. I still have to line up for the toilet all the time.
What? Do you, someone's constantly in
someone's
there.
Someone's always in there.
And there's only one other person living there.
Yeah, we just have to pee at the same time. I'm your kidding again, Dave.
How many women have you been overcame to invite into your house?
That we do have a guest with us, so there's one other person living in my house at the moment who does not always live there.
Who's the guest?
My friend Libby. Her friend, Deb's friend Libby.
See, it starts with
Deb's
one.
Overcome.
Starts with one.
Yeah.
You'll come home tonight, there'll be 17 other women
but
in
then
your bed.
Libby's boyfriend was there for a while too. So there was two other people.
You've been overrun.
Oh my god, I'm being mansoned.
I'm being mansoned.
By like letting guests stay in my house, I'm being mansoned.
That's how it, that's what a mansoning is.
That's how they get you. I don't think it is what a mansoning is.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean,
that's not
so
what he
far
was known for.
Yeah, that's what he's known for, right? From so far.
Yep. So he teaches his followers. They're his followers now. That they were the reincarnation of the original Christians, and the Romans were the establishment. He's anti-establishment.
So, but they're fighting against
anti-Roman.
Mm. What an empire that fell 1,000 years
Reincarnations
ago.
Reincarnations of Dave.
Oh,
so he's grabbing bits and pieces from a few places.
Yeah, there. He's also had like a lot of Scientology background as well.
He has.
Yeah, he himself strongly implied that he was Christ. He often told his story.
He didn't say it straight out, though.
Just strongly implied it.
Hello, Mr. Manson. Are you Christ? Some say.
I'm not. Look, I'm not. Hey. I'm not saying no.
And it just keeps walking around in a robe.
Just answer the question. He often told a story envisioning himself on the cross with the nails in his feet and hands. So the implication is pretty strong. And sometime around 1967, he began using the alias Charles Willis Manson, and he often said it very slowly, like, Charles Will is man's son.
Oh, great,
implying
great
that
work.
His will was the same as the son of man.
I can just imagine when he was in bed and thought of that. He got up in the middle of the night to write that down.
No, he got up in the middle of the night
forgot.
To applaud himself. Yeah.
Why do you think
followers, wake up.
You've done it, Manson.
So if his mum didn't hook up with that Manson guy, maybe this all could have been avoided.
Yeah.
Maybe if, if she hooked up with really good guy, Gary really good guy, then he would have been, see now I'm Charles Will is really good guy. Everyone, let's go for free lunch on me.
And then we're going to pick up some rubbish on the highway, free of charge. Not as a punishment, as a reward.
Yay.
For living on this beautiful earth.
What about...
Thanks, earth.
But you could draw the fact that...
You got to thank the earth.
You got to.
Maybe, well, he never knew who his father was. Maybe it was an immaculate conception. Allah, Jesus H. Christ.
What's the H stand for? In
Horatio.
Horatio.
Is that true?
Yes. How do you not know that? Jesus' middle name was Horatio.
Look, I've got no religious background, so
you
I have no idea
so
if you're joking.
You are so gullible
around.
Today.
It could be.
No, it couldn't.
I feel like you would have known that. Yeah, I don't know where that... I don't think there is a middle H name. I think I don't know where that saying comes from. Are you thinking of William H. Macy?
Yeah, is that what you're thinking of?
Sorry.
I get that
always happens.
It was because when Jesus wanted to join the Actors Guild in America, and there was already
there was
a Jesus
already a
cross.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You had to add the H.
And all the good ones do have a middle initial.
Yeah.
That's Samuel L. Jackson. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
That counts. I'll accept that.
I'm really proud
And
of
juniors
that.
As well. There's a
juniors.
Lot of juniors. Mm-hmm. Like the Iron Man is a junior.
Charles Manson Jr.
Charles Manson
he's a very
also
famous
in the
actor.
Acting guild.
Very good actor.
He's a character actor.
Do we find out more about him and if he's okay?
No, I didn't really look into that because at this stage as well, around this time, Mary became pregnant.
She gave
a birth to a son she named Valentine Michael.
A son.
A son. Valentine is a saint as well.
Nicknamed Pooh Bear. Is that a thing?
Much like the Disney cartoon that Jesus endorsed.
Well, by not saying anything. He endorsed it by...
What?
Just staying out of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Find me a record of Jesus saying Pooh Bear sucks.
Never said it.
Great Never point. Right. So I think she was like the first of quite a few of them to...
And is Mary the...
Have his child.
Which one's Mary?
The librarian.
The bookworm.
The bookish one. Yeah. So I
She's
don't...
She's the
I,
one that...
I don't remember how many kids he had, but there was
a lot of them.
Oh, so there's lots of.
But there's eight, out there, right? 18 women, and there's no other men yet.
There, in the overall group, there is.
Right, because if you're, if they're all your partners, God, he'd be tired. 18 women, 18
girlfriends. I don't think he's being a very attentive boyfriend. Like, I don't think he's like, how was your day, Mary? Okay, you've got 5 minutes. I don't think he's the type of person that treats them all that well, to be perfectly honest with you.
He calls a general meeting. All right, everyone, tell me how your days were now.
In unison.
Yeah.
Turn to the person next to you and tell them one fact about you.
We're going
to
do some icebreakers.
And then come back. We're going to come back.
And you present back to the class.
I'm going
to
throw the tennis ball to one of you. If you catch it, you've got to say a fact about the person next to you.
Oh, yeah. Have you lived that life?
Yeah. I did drama classes, yeah.
Yeah.
So lame.
That's what I always hated about starting a new semester at uni.
So awful. It's like
I don't want to do icebreaker. I just want to learn about PR or whatever I'm doing.
I just want to learn what the H stands for.
I just want to do my...
I think it's nice that they got a little bit of sport into your drama class by throwing the tennis ball around.
No. There was a lot of drop catches.
Hand-eye coordination, very important for actors. That's so good. You got to know where you're...
In case you got to do that Novak Djokovic biopic. You got to know.
Biopic. I like how you said biopic there.
Biopic.
Yeah, that's nice. That's like a. That's like if you can see out of both eyes, right?
You're an idiot. Hey, can I go on? I'm just waiting for one of you to say, do go on.
I do go on.
Thank you.
It's definitely biopic.
I think it is, but I say biopic. But I say wander and wonder wrong, don't I? I just say wonder for both of them.
That's a Melbourne thing. That's a weird Melbourne thing where we switch O's and A's and we switch a few vowels around. So we say helicopter.
I say helicopter.
Yeah, helicopter. But you're going to think about it now. But
I wouldn't say helicopter.
You just did.
No.
Why would you lie? Like the lie was given away in your lie.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say helicopter.
Helicopter.
It's interesting. I didn't think I did either.
What do you say?
Apparently, it's common in Melbourne to say helicopter.
Instead of?
Helicopter.
Helicopter. Heli.
Oh, that's a helicopter.
I think I say hell. Than he, cause, just because of the word hell.
I should have asked, and then we could have figured it out better. Now you know, you're probably going to make better life choices.
I
kind of like how we're finding our own accent here.
Yeah, it's nice.
I mean, that happened because it's a youngish city.
Ours is a little bit rougher than, like, if you got, you hear the Adelaide.
Adelaide's very posh.
They're a bit more proper.
Apparently it's one of the closest accents to the Queen's English.
Yeah, I would agree.
Which is interesting. Compared to other, like, majority of English people. All right.
What about Perth? They say chance as well, don't they?
Yes, maybe. They do.
And they say, but they say derby when it should be derby. But then Americans say derby. I mean, it is spelt derby, so that makes sense. It's like,
maybe
that's a weird
wrong.
Switching of the vowel sound for no reason.
I just think like chance, dance, France. We sound a bit rough. But when I was in Ireland recently, I get a little bit self-conscious of the accent when I'm traveling, when I'm overseas. But this, a couple of people said they really like the Australian accent. One taxi driver was like, oh, I love the Australian accent. It's beautiful.
Really?
The women beautiful. Especially. Yeah, he said the women especially sound, oh, just so lovely.
Oh, the way you dance, take a chance and move to Dublin.
I'm happy to be driving you in my car.
Dublin. Oh, the words just roll off your tongue.
Tongue.
Yeah, nah, we do not have a good accent.
No, but that's what he said. I'm not.
I mean, I like it, but I wouldn't say it's lovely.
I agree. I was like, we don't sound lovely at all. And then one lady, the elderly couple I befriended at Riverdance, she said, but you don't sound too Australian. I was like, thank you.
I think that's because the Australian accents people think are Australian accents or Americans pretending to be Australian, you know. G'day, mate. Oh, here we going there. You know,
really outback.
Rigid.
Really rough. But I've never said rigid in my life.
All right. We just want to give you a little boot up the bum.
That's the Simpsons.
That's a funny name. I'd call it Chaz Wazza.
I
love that episode. Anyway. I want to call it. Oh, yeah. I remembered it as Chaz Wazza.
Yes, Chaz Wazza.
Okay.
Oh,
I Fuck see you've played Knifey's Booty before.
Is the Simpsons episode coming up anytime soon, Davey Boy?
Oh, it's a big one. It's a big research project. I'm watching the first 10 series again.
Great.
I'm going to like skip ahead a bit here because we haven't even got to the main thing. I do want to tell you one kind of funny story about him.
Oh, great, funny.
Well,
good, finally.
It's a little bit weird. It's sort of about his like presentation of himself, if that makes sense. So basically, at the beach one day, this guy that he met, Gary Stromberg, fantastic name. He was a young Universal Studios producer, and he was working on a film adaptation. He met Charles Manson, and they were at the beach one day, and Stromberg watched while Manson preached against the materialistic outlook, only then to be questioned about his well-furnished bus. He had like this bus that he carted everybody around in. And so nonchalantly, he just tosses the bus keys to the doubter, who probably drives away with it. Drives away, takes his bus, and Manson's just like, whatever, no big deal.
He's like, cool. Oh, he's called me out on this, and I'm stubborn.
Yeah, and so Stromberg reckons that Manson had a dynamic personality with an ability to read a person's weakness and play them. So he was really manipulative.
He must be, if he's convincing all these people to do this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even that crazy yet, but...
He just sort of does whatever it takes to get what he wants. He's very creepy. On one occasion, the enraged father of one of the runaway girls who had joined the Manson family pointed a shotgun at Manson and told him he was about to die. But Manson quietly invited him to shoot him. I was like, go ahead, man, shoot me, before talking to the man about love and with the aid of LSD persuaded him to accept the situation.
Well, I should have shot him.
Should have shot him.
So who, is the guy with the gun suddenly given LSD?
Yeah.
Put this in your mouth and I'll tell you all about myself. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Let's just say, hey, man.
Actually, the charmingness maybe isn't a thing if he's giving LSD.
Yeah, he's just drugging people.
Okay, but how do you convince somebody who wants to kill you to just like sit down and talk about love for a bit? And
LSD.
How do you get it to them? How do you get it in them? How do you get it in their gut?
You go, look, happy with you to shoot. Happy with you shooting me, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But obviously, that's very final. Can we just have a quick chat first? Quick chat, and then you can shoot me. Like, reasonably, it'd be hard to say no to that.
That's fine. You're only discussing the chat element.
Okay.
How do you give them the LSD?
In a glass of water.
Yeah.
In a glass of water.
Tea, maybe?
Can you... LSD
I got the kettle on. Would you like...
That's fucking genius.
I've just got the kettle on. Do you want
to... I've just poured myself one. Like, it'd be awful if it went cold.
Be ashamed to waste it, really. Yeah.
Can I get you one as well? Want a cup of tea? Want a little cup of...
Okay, but after this, I'm going to kill you.
No, absolutely. Right, fine, absolutely. That's the plan.
I insist.
That's the plan. Okay.
In fact, I'd be offended if you didn't kill
okay.
me.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, fine. Well, yeah, let's...
Oh, if you put it like that.
Let's have some tea.
Wow, okay. Yeah, I see. So that is pretty charming. That's pretty charming, though.
But I mean, I am also an evil, charming person.
Oh, you're so charming.
Matt knows how to manipulate people. I've seen him talk his way out of being murdered.
Yeah.
Several times.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? It's weird that he keeps getting in that situation to begin with. But here we are. You got a murdery-looking face, you know?
I mean, when you know you can easily get out of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You walk through life freely.
It's fun to get into a murdery situation.
Sure.
I search them out.
Yeah, no, you must.
I don't, listeners. Please. I know we've got murdery listeners because they keep asking for fucked up topics.
They love murders.
They do, but who doesn't?
Curry Caveman sitting there going, get to the murder. Get to the murder bit.
Thanks, Corey. Thanks again, mate. Okay, so here's what you were talking about earlier, Dave. So in late spring of 1968, when Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys... picked up two hitchhiking Manson women. I like they're called Manson women. Right. It's fucking terrifying.
And Dennis the drummer? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he was the drummer of the Beach Boys.
But I think they all had a sing in the harmony.
They loved to sing.
They all had a sing.
He tinkled the ivories as well, I think. Anyway, so he picks up two Manson women.
Tinkled meaning pissed on.
He pissed on the piano.
Well, it was the 1960s.
Got to piss on everything. So you mark your territory. So he picks up two women, Patricia Krenwinkle, fucking great name.
Oof.
Oh, Patty Krenwinkle. And Ella Jo Bailey, also a good name. And he brought them back to his house for a few hours. They just kind of hung out for a bit.
What a day when you could be hitchhiking and a rock and roll superstar would pick you up and take you back to their place.
They just hang out. I'm assuming there was probably some illicit substances taken. There was probably some booze. But they had a good time. So then he comes home to his house in the early hours of the following morning. after a night recording session, and he's greeted in the driveway of his own house by Charles Manson.
What up?
Who emerged from the house. So Wilson's like, hi. And he asks, are you gonna hurt me? And Manson's like, nah, man, I'm not going to hurt you, totally.
Just have this tea.
So they go inside the house. Wilson discovers 12 strangers, mostly women, in his house.
And he's just like, all right, this is better than I thought it was going to be.
They're all just sort of crashing. This is so great. Over the next few months, as their numbers doubled, the family members who made themselves part of his Sunset Boulevard household cost Wilson approximately $100,000.
Wow, big money.
This included a large medical bill for treatment of their gonorrhea.
Oh, no.
And $21,000 for the accidental destruction of his uninsured car, which they borrowed. Oh, accidental destruction. They didn't just crash it. I crashed my car the other day. Just a little one.
What? You all right?
I'm fine.
How bad?
It's not. It drove here. He's still fine, but he's...
What's your car's name again? Gary.
Colin. Gary. Similar.
Colin. After but, Leno and Woodley? After Leno?
Sure. Yep.
Great.
But it's not going to cost me $21,000 because the car isn't worth that anyway. But $21,000, they crashed his car. And he would, apparently though, like, it seems like he kind of just liked hanging out with them. Like, they'd sing and talk and, this is so awful. So Wilson would sing with Manson. They'd jam, basically, while the women were treated as servants to them both. Yeah.
But only while they were jamming.
Probably, yeah. Otherwise, it was a very equal society.
All right, so as soon as you pick up the guitar, they dropped everything.
All right, the boys are playing guitar. You know what that means, ladies.
We've got to get a plate of strawberries. All right.
Who's got the big fern to fan them with? Yeah. Where did you put it? Sue, where did you put the big fern?
I think I left it in the John.
The John.
Oh, thanks, Sue. I'll go get it.
What the fuck, Sue?
Had to fan away. Someone did a big poo go on.
Good one. Good one, Sue. Appreciate that. I'm Dennis, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm
Dennis. What's that in reference to? I don't quite get the poo go on joke.
Nah, it'll be funny in like 40 years, though.
Okay, great.
Yeah, you're all druggies. I don't know what you're talking about, but we have a good time.
We have a good time.
Dennis is into it.
Yeah, well, he seems to be. He paid for some studio time to record songs written and performed by Charles Manson, and he introduces him to a few business, entertainment biz acquaintances.
What are the Beach Boys doing at this stage? Are they right in the middle of being...
California girls.
Oh, he was singing about the family.
Yeah.
Because some of them were from Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I get it.
I wish they could all be California girls.
Yeah, most of them are.
But there's a few.
There's a couple there.
That aren't.
Sue, for instance. Always forgetting where the bloody fern is.
Is Dennis the only one of the Beach Boys that actually surfed? I'm pretty sure that is a fact.
Oh, really?
But the others didn't surf. They sang about surfing and they just did not.
I didn't think any of them did. Who? Which one did?
The Manson friend.
He right. looks like a surfer dude.
Right.
But that is also part of their promotion, though.
Interesting. Mm. No, I don't know.
But he drowned.
He did drown he was 39.
That. So, I don't know, possibly surfing, possibly giving it a go for the first time. He thought he'd been living a lie for several decades.
Lesson learned. Don't try anything.
Never try.
So the entertainment biz bigwigs that he meets are Greg Jacobson, Terry Melcher, and Rudy Altobelli. Remember those last two? Terry Belcher, Rudy Altobelli. Right, because Rudy owned a house he would soon rent to actress Sharon Tate and her husband, director Roman Polanski. Not that that has any relevance, so it's fine.
Last time I hear those names.
Totally fine. So he establishes, Manson established a base for the group at, I think it's Span Movie Ranch? Span? It's S-P-A-H-N. Span. Let's say Span.
I think it's Span Horatio N.
You're an idiot.
That's what the H stands for.
Span Horatio N. So basically, Wilson's manager got them evicted from his house. So they go to this ranch, which was used for like film as a film set, back in the day. But now it was kind of like it deteriorated.
So they're living on the set of Bonanza, practically.
Basically, it was a TV and movie set.
So Wilson eventually came to his senses, sort of thing.
Kicked him out. Yeah. Get out.
Satisfying, I guess.
So, is it? Well, I don't know.
Yeah, a bit. I mean, they haven't done anything too bad yet, so.
Yeah, and so far they're just a weird group of people who like to party, but it was the 60s, man.
Yeah, women were free love and women are all our slaves.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's terrible.
It was awful. So they're living at this ranch, and they sort of did work around the grounds. And so they were living with basically the owner, who was this 80-year-old guy called George Spann. And so they didn't, like, they helped out around, and Manson ordered the family's women, including Lynette Squeaky Fromm, to occasionally have sex with the nearly blind 80-year-old owner, just as some sort of, like, payment. Oh, they also, the women also acted as seeing eye guides for him because his vision wasn't good. So, I mean, that's kind of nice.
Shock on that job.
Yeah, that job's fine. Having sex with him bits, probably not great, or all that kind, but that's fine. So then a guy called Charles Watson soon joined the group at Spann's ranch. Now, he was a small-town Texan who'd quit college and moved to California, and he met Manson at Dennis Wilson's house one night. Spann nicknamed Watson Tex because of his Texan drawl, so Tex Watson becomes part of the gang.
Is that because he doesn't want another Charles?
Probably. There's too many.
Tex is a great name.
Tex is a great name.
That's the second nickname we've had on the podcast. Remember Tex Banwell? From the Second World War.
Oh, there was
the guy
a Tex
that kept escaping from everywhere.
And at the time, did I mention that I get called Tex sometimes? Older people will call me Tex.
I think, yeah. And then I told you that Tex Perkins' real name is Greg.
Oh, so disappointing.
We've relived it.
It's great to be back. It's great to be back.
But is he really a Perkins?
Yes.
Greg Perkins.
Greg Perkins.
Fuck, it's a terrible name.
Do you have a great uncle called Greg Perkins?
You'd change it to Tex, wouldn't you? Yeah, Jesus. Tex is no, great. No Greg's in my family, thank you.
We stay away from them.
There's an
We've got a shitload of Johns and Phillips, but no Gregs.
Phil Perks.
There's an AFL footballer's nickname's Tex. Tex Walker. I guess that's because Walker, Texas Ranger, I guess.
Maybe, yeah. Who knows?
He's got I can't imagine an Adelaide Crows footballer would have any connection to Texas.
You never know.
You never do know, because I'll never look into it.
You'll forget about it.
As God is my witness, I'll not look into that.
For some time, it gets weird. For some time, Manson had been saying that racial tension between blacks and whites was growing, and that blacks would soon rise up in rebellion in American cities. On one cold night, I think it was New Year's Eve, at one of the ranches. They sort of spread out across a couple of ranches. They moved around a little bit. So the family members were all gathered around outside a large fire, and Manson was explaining that the social turmoil he'd been predicting had also been predicted by the Beatles. So he thought that the White Album songs told it all, although in code. In fact, he maintained that the album was directed at the family itself, who were an elite group that was being instructed to preserve the worthy from the impending disaster. So he's like, the Beatles are onto it too.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Don't bring the Beatles into this.
Yeah, that's awful.
So what you got to do is like look for the messages in between the lyrics, but when they say things like peace and love, ignore that.
Ignore
bit.
That. They're being ironic.
Yeah.
They mean the opposite. It's opposite day.
It's opposite day, whatever they say. So really, we don't, all you not need is hate.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, love. We need love. That's what that means.
Ah, damn it.
Okay.
Wait, hang on. No, I'm wrong. Okay. So all you need, what's the opposite of need is want. All you want is hate. There we go. There it is.
All you want is hate.
All you want is hate. Da, da, da.
But all, opposite of all is nothing.
Nothing you want is hate.
Nothing they want.
Nothing they want is hate.
Nothing they want is hate. So nothing they want is hate. So they don't want
nothing
hate.
Nothing they want
so
is
let's give
hate.
Them hate.
And I'm not 100% sold that mm-hmm. want is the opposite of need.
Nothing they want
but
is
look.
Hate. Hate. Hate is all they nothing want.
Yeah.
God.
So,
God,
okay.
It's catchy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I only just heard that message then. I'm going to go kill some cunts. All right, bye.
I guess the Beatles told me to.
Well, yeah.
I'm going to kill some cunts.
We got to stop saying that.
No, it's pretty funny.
I can imagine being in the context where you've been partying. The leader's a bit crazy, says some weird stuff, but then suddenly you're at a bonfire and he's saying the Beatles want to kill it. You'd be like, oh, no. Shit.
Oh,
I'm in one of those situations.
I thought he was a bit... You know,
yeah,
kooky,
I thought we were just going to do a lot of drugs and have fun.
Charlie's weird. And then you're too far in.
Yeah, you're like, I'm too deep now. I've got to go along with it.
You're stuck. There was another Beatles reference as well in that they they got out of the cold of the desert and they put themselves moving closer into LA, and they were staying in this canary yellow home. So Manson called it the Yellow Submarine, which is another Beatles reference. So fucking weird. And also because the location would allow the group to remain submerged beneath the awareness of the outside world.
No one will find us in this yellow house. Yeah.
Oh boy.
We'll blend in.
So they prepared for the impending apocalypse. They thought, this is what's going
to
happen.
There's always an apocalypse coming with these cults. Yeah.
It's a good motivator to get people to do what you want.
That's true.
And he termed the apocalypse Helter Skelter after the Beatles song. So he's kind of closely affiliated with Helter Skelter now, which is awful because the Beatles deserve better than that.
Yeah, it kind of ruined that song.
Yeah. Wasn't my favourite anyway, though, to be honest.
Yeah.
If it was like, the apocalypse, Blackbird, I'd be like, no! I love that song! Anyway, so by February, Manson's vision was complete. They decided that they were going to create an album of songs as subtle as those of the Beatles that would trigger the predicted chaos. So they're going to write some trigger songs. Not funny, but
it does sound a bit like when you're fucked. 13 years old in a band in a garage and you think these songs are going to change the world. It does feel a bit like that.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked.
It's so funny that they thought, like, but do they think the Beatles songs are doing that?
Yeah. And they decided that once all this tension arose and the apocalypse started, that they were going to ride out the conflict in the Bottomless Pit, which was a secret city beneath Death Valley.
That sounds like a good spot to hang.
It seems like a great spot to hang.
There's a secret city there.
Apparently. Oh. So while the family members worked on vehicles and pored over maps to prepare for their desert escape, they also worked on songs for their world-changing album. When they were told that Terry Melcher, who's one of the big entertainment biz dudes, he's a music producer.
Terry Belcher?
Melcher. Oh. He was going to come to the house to hear their material. So they're like, sweet, we've got all our songs ready. And the women prepared a meal and they cleaned up the place, but Melcher never arrived.
Oh, dear. Was he actually ever booked or?
Yeah, like they said, hey, come along, and he didn't. But maybe he just got the dates wrong.
But was it a Charles lie? I mean, or did he actually tell
well,
him?
Well, he came another time.
All right, that's good.
But so he doesn't come that time. So on March 23rd in 1969, Manson, uninvited, went to Melcher's house. He's like, I'm just going to go to his house. But it was actually Rudy Altobelli's property that Melcher had, like, rented out, but he wasn't the tenant anymore. As of that February, the tenants were Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski.
Oh.
That is unlucky.
So Manson was met at the door by a photographer friend of Sharon Tate. His name was Shaharok Hatami. Hatami was there to photograph Tate in advance of her departure for Rome the next day. Having seen Manson through a window as he sort of came up to the house, he sort of went to the front door and was like, hey man, what's up? And Manson said he was looking for someone, and Hatami didn't recognise the name, so he said, oh no, this is the Polanski residence. Maybe try the back alley, because there was like a guest house around the back. So he said, try around there if you're looking for somebody. But then he was like, that's a bit weird, there's just a stranger wandering around.
And that I've invited him in.
Exactly.
To the back.
Hey, go to the neighbor's
place.
Thanks,
photographer, you fucking idiot. Oh.
So Charles Manson goes around the back and then just, like, is gone for a couple of minutes, comes back and leaves. Okay. So he's left the house. It's fine. Everything's fine. Totally fine.
Okay, thank God. I thought something bad was about to happen.
That evening, Manson returned to the property and again went back to the guest house, presuming to enter the enclosed porch. He spoke with Rudy Altobelli, who was there, he'd just come out of the shower. And although Manson was asking for Melcher, Altobelli felt that Charles had come looking for him as well. So he's just sort of like out to get these record execs now. Who knows? So he tells him, oh, I don't know where Melcher lives now. He's moved away. But they kind of knew each other. Like Manson and Altobelli had met before. So he was kind of like, hey, Charles, good to see you, I guess.
Thanks for turning up at my house at midnight. Yeah.
So it was really weird. So then Manson's sort of doing like, hey, so we're making some music. If you want to, like, I don't know, give us a record label or something, that'd be pretty sick. And Altobelli's like, oh, man, I'm leaving the country tomorrow. Manson's like, cool, well, what about when you get back? And he's like, oh, I'm going for a year.
I'm going for 10 years.
He wasn't going for a year. But eventually...
So he knew, this guy knew it was on him that is a bit fucked.
Yeah, he was like, this guy's a bit strange and turning up to my house late at night.
Yeah.
And like, don't bother my tenants in the main house, please.
Yeah.
So that's just a little bit strange. So then on, in May of that year, so a couple of months later, Terry Melcher did go to the ranch and he heard Charles Manson and the women sing, and, he arranged another visit not long after, and he brought a friend who had like a mobile recording unit. So they recorded a few of their songs just to, you know, get the ball rolling on their world changing album. By June, Manson was telling the family that they might have to show the blacks how to start Helter Skelter. So he's like, we've got to start the uprising.
Oh, right. Wait, so he's saying that they're going to have to show black Americans. It's an American thing. Yeah.
So it's
just... Yeah, it's funny that I'm still surprised how
bizarre
he is. It's
So strange.
I'm not following his train of thought here.
It's almost like there is no real train.
It is almost like that.
Toot toot.
So there's a couple of, it's going to be so flippant there. There's a couple of murders. But but the main one that obviously they're the most famous for is the night of the... August 8th in 1969, when Manson directed Tex Watson to take Susan Atkins, Linda Kasabian, and Patricia Krenwinkle.
That's who the band Kasabian are named after.
Yes.
Ah.
That is true, which is creepy.
Yeah.
He said, go to Melcher's former home and kill everyone there. Just go to...
But he's not there, Charles.
He's not there. He sends them... Kill everyone there.
Who is there? It's just the Roman Polanski and whoever?
Sharon Tate. She had like four friends. There was only five people.
Oh.
Only five
has
people.
Has anyone died? These are the first murders they've done?
No, there was a couple before that. This is sort of the one they were most famous for, though.
Right.
And then...
But over the the years, that were all the 50s, and he hadn't killed anyone until this point?
No, I don't think so.
A weird turn.
Yeah. So, yeah, they... And the attacks were always kind of out of nowhere. So this was just that they were living in the house of someone that used to live there who he's mad at for no apparent reason.
Right.
So it's super strange. Oh. And the murders are quite brutal. Like, I was reading about a couple of them and I was like, I probably don't need to put that into the report. That's...
And all five of them get murdered, do they?
Yeah, they all get murdered. Yeah. And then they write... They wrote pig in blood on the front of the door as they left. There was a couple of references. They'd either write Helter Skelter or they'd write pig. A few Beatles references, like the song Piggies.
Yeah, Piggies.
So they'd, I don't know, because obviously that album was inciting the apocalypse. Which is pretty messed up. The next night, on August 9th, six family members, the four from the night before, and they also took Leslie Van Houghton and Steve Grogan, who went by Clem, doesn't make sense. They rode out and they just sort of went driving. Like, they just went, they didn't really have a plan on where they were going to go, but they were just going to go on a murder. And after a few hours driving around, in which he considered a number of murders and even attempted one or two of them, Manson gave Kasabian directions that brought the group to an address on Waverley Drive. This was the home of supermarket executive Lino LaBianca and his wife Rosemary, who was a dress shop co-owner. So it was next to... This house was next to a house that they'd attended a party at earlier in the year.
And that's the connection?
That's the connection. They'd been to a house party.
Had they complained about the noise or something?
Nah. And, they're... So they murdered this guy and his wife, Lino LaBianca and his wife, Rosemary. Again, that's where I sort of read in great detail about the murder, and I was like, oh, that doesn't need to go in.
Oh, is it pretty...
It's really brutal.
So they're doing this to try and kick off a race war. I just... How is that going to start a race
war? Well, there's a couple of instances, and I'm remembering this rather than reading it, where they would sort of be like, oh, we'll take Rosemary's wallet and we'll leave it in like a black neighbourhood. And so that way, like, a, you know, a black kid will find it and use the credit cards.
And it'll look like they did the murder. It'll
look like they did it.
Oh, my God. That is awful.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was already awful.
Yeah.
But then, like, yeah, framing it on other innocent people, it's just so, so strange. So the Tate murder obviously became huge news. The Polanski's housekeeper, Winifred, had arrived for work that morning and discovered the murder scene. On August 10th, detectives were investigating the LaBianca murders as well, but they hadn't put them together. They were just like two different murders that had happened. It's kind of weird. The LaBianca crime scene was discovered at about 10:30 p.m. on the 10th of August. It says approximately 19 hours after the murders were committed. 15-year-old Frank Struthers, Rosemary's son from a prior marriage and Lino's stepson, returned from a camping trip and was disturbed by seeing all the window shades of his home drawn and by the fact that his stepfather's speedboat was still attached to the family car in the driveway. So he calls his sister and her boyfriend, and the boyfriend sort of takes them into the house, and they discover their parents' bodies. Ugh. It's really messed up.
I just don't understand the speedboat thing.
So, like, he's like, that's weird that they haven't detached the boat from the car. The car's just parked in the driveway with the boat still attached.
But were they attacked mid-boat?
Oh, who knows? Maybe they just got back from a trip, hadn't detached the boat yet. You know when you get used to your parents' routines?
Yeah, I guess so.
So you'd be like, that's weird. Dad would always detach the boat straight away.
It's amazing that you had the foresight to know that something had gone.
I think you'd know.
Just have a feeling, I guess.
You'd have a feeling getting back to your own house, especially your parents' place. You'd be like, something's not right here.
Ugh.
Very strange. Awful. Awful, awful, awful. Keeping it light. Okay. Yay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's hard to make this bit funny. Sorry, I know. Everyone.
It's hard to make any of it all that funny, to be perfectly honest. And I'll, you know, we've been going a while, so I'll just sort of keep powering through. Eventually, they connected some of the earlier murders with the Tate murder. And so they sort of went looking for the Manson family, and they'd kind of moved around. And like they said before, they're going to live in the underground city and wait for the apocalypse. So there was a joint force between the National Park Rangers and officers of the Highway Patrol, the Sheriff's Office. They raided the Myers Ranch and Barker Ranch, which were a couple of ranches that they were often staying at. And they followed clues unwittingly left by the family members, like a burned out earth mover. And they found stolen dune buggies and other vehicles and arrested 24 people, including Charles Manson. A highway patrol officer found Manson hiding in a cabinet beneath a sink in the bathroom.
Oh, dear.
Which is a good place to hide, I feel. I don't really need to go over the like all their trials and everything like that. There's a couple of like weird little things, like Manson tried to represent himself in court.
That feels like something he'd do.
That feels like something he would do. And then
and just bring out like Beatles lyrics.
Yeah, we'll say,
Your Honour,
arrest my case.
So the judge was William Keane, and he sort of reluctantly granted Manson permission to act as his own attorney.
I thought you were about to say bail, and I was like, no, that cannot happen.
Because he was already, like, because of his conduct in court, he was just, like, so outlandish and nonsensical that they took away that permission. They're like, no, you crazy. So then, like, the next day, he filed an affidavit of prejudice against that judge, who was then replaced by a different judge, Charles Horatio Alder.
Thank you.
So on Friday, July 24th, the first day of testimony, Manson appeared in court with an X carved into his forehead. He issued a statement that he was considered inadequate and incompetent to speak or defend himself and had X'd himself from the establishment's world.
Oh.
He's like, you won't let me speak for myself. I'm not going to be one of your little chess pieces.
He said, Your Honour, everybody's got something to hide except for me and my monkey. I rest my case.
And they're like,
and he's a free man still to this day.
Just because of that.
Yeah, they're like, we got no comeback. The defense rests.
So he's carved an X into his head. Over the following weekend, the female defendants duplicated the mark on their own foreheads, as did most family members within another day or so. Years later, he turned his into a swastika. So, you know, you've still got things to look forward to, Dave.
Oh, fuck no.
Oh, it's so good.
But then years after that, he turned it into a little house with a chimney.
Yeah, it's nice.
A little picket fence out the front.
I might...
Sounds much more appealing.
I might kind of wrap up with a few sort of weird things. So just in terms of like his followers. So during the trial, family members loitered near the entrances and corridors of the courthouse. To keep them out of the courtroom itself, the prosecution subpoenaed them as prospective witnesses who would not be able to enter while others were testifying. When the group itself established like a vigil on the sidewalk, some members wore a sheathed hunting knife.
They
were just holding knives. And they all had the X on their foreheads. They're just holding hunting knives, which makes sense. Some family members attempted to dissuade witnesses from testifying. Prosecution witness Paul Watkins and Juan Flynn were both threatened. Watkins was badly burned in a suspicious fire in his van. Ooh, former family member Barbara Hoyt, who had overheard Susan Atkins describing the Tate murders to the family member. To another family member, Ruth Ann Morehouse, agreed to accompany Ruth to Hawaii. She's like, yeah, cool, let's go to Hawaii. And then Morehouse gave her a hamburger spiked with several doses of LSD to try and, like, silence her, or probably try to kill her. She was found sprawled on the Honolulu curb in a drugged stupor and was taken to hospital. But then, like, I don't think she kind of went on to...
great things.
To do much.
Oh, I don't think she went on to be a witness in the case or anything because super creepy. Super, super creepy. On October 5, Manson was denied the court's permission to question a prosecution witness whom the defense attorney had declined to cross examine. So he's like, I'll do the questioning.
If you won't talk to her, I will.
Yeah.
Sit down, Charles.
He's just a terrifying person. So he's sort of become like, he's like a really fascinating, people are obsessed with him, are fascinated by him. There's still, to this day, he's 80 years old and in prison and he's still, there's still articles written about him in interviews. And I was reading one interview in like Rolling Stone where this young girl who's like 24 and like had a really good upbringing, like quite a Christian upbringing as well, but was now like living at his ranch still.
He was Christian too, weren't you saying?
Yeah.
He believed he was Jesus. He believed he was. So maybe that makes sense.
So he still has a ranch that people live at?
He still has like followers and she visits him every weekend and they spend like 5 hours together. And she has a swastika, or not swastika, but she has like the X mark. Well, it might be swastika. X marked in her head and stuff like that. And it's... still, and she's like modern. She's like 25 and he's 80 and it's fascinating and terrifying. And I obviously do not have any fun facts.
Right, but he's still in jail. He's in jail forever.
Yeah, yeah. So they were all given the death penalty, but then the death penalty was taken away. So there's like life sentences. So five of them were all convicted and life sentences.
Are they all still kicking?
I'm not sure, actually. I'm not sure if they
I didn't
all
know
are.
Any of the other names.
No. Manson definitely is, but yeah.
Kasabian.
It's interesting.
I didn't know that about the Kasabian.
Yeah,
band.
I read read that this morning. I was like, oh, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, weird choice.
There's there's a couple of famous interviews. There's one that was like in 1989. Nicholas Schreck conducted an interview with Manson. And he cut the interview up as part of like a documentary called Charles Manson Superstar. And he concluded that Manson was not insane, but merely acting that way out of frustration.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I do when I'm frustrated? I plan murdering heaps of people.
Start a weird cult.
Oh.
Find meanings in places that they're definitely
out of. They're definitely not there.
Helter Skelter. No. Helter Skelter. What's that? What's that, John?
Not pricing.
So that was a bit of a weird one, but...
that is... and at the end of that, I've decided to withdraw my aspirations of becoming a cult leader.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But...
probably not the best aspirations to have.
Well, I mean, you know...
I like certain elements of it, just like hanging out.
Yeah.
That's probably
I like the sense of community.
I think the community feel.
I also really like my own space, though.
I think yeah, I'd probably prefer to start like a book club or something.
Yeah. If you could just meet
once a week, once a month.
Even, you know, yeah, bi-monthly or...
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Biannually, okay, even. I like a lot of my own time.
Yeah, yeah, just a couple of times a year.
Yeah. There's and it Christmas. Takes me a while to read a novel.
At Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably what I do with my relatives, really.
Yeah.
We meet up once a year at Christmas and we're our own little cult.
Yeah, no, I think it's just a family.
Well, yeah,
although family. They were the Manson family. Oh, yeah. Wow.
I'm part of a family. I see a little too much of myself in the man. But not the Nazi stuff.
Interesting that you feel the need to take that out. Yeah. Anyway, Corey, thank you for your suggestion.
Yeah, you've ruined my day. You
curry yeah. caveman.
Caveman curry.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank Corey. You. Thanks, Corey. Thanks for the suggestion.
That. So that's only come through once. I thought that might have been a multi-suggest.
There's definitely another one that was like, more serial killers, or I like the killer episodes.
There's multiple killer people out there.
So far, have you guys done any... Because I've done H.H. Holmes, and now I've done Manson.
I'm not into it, really.
Am I the sick one in this group?
I think so. But I'm glad I'm glad you're doing it, because you're sort of appeasing... Like, I feel like that's a reason for a crazy person to kill us, is not talking about killers enough.
Right.
Yeah.
You feel like? But you're
Jess does the killers.
Every 3 months you bring one in. So, oh, thank God.
Dave does the mysteries.
Ooh. Yeah, what do you
which
do?
Which I like. I do the frivolous things. Elvis last week.
Now, you're Matt, so frivolous.
Now, Matt does the ambitious ones from the hat. You pick a topic and then halfway through go, oh.
Yeah, mine are normally just plucked out of the hat.
Plucked. You're random. I love it.
I really don't want to pluck out a seat. I don't think I want to get, like, yeah. What no, you've had to do, just delve into it. I'm not keen on that at all.
Would you prefer to... Is that the only time you'll put a topic back in the hat, as if it's too brutal?
I never put them back in. Never put them back in.
Never go back.
Never go back.
Never go back.
The hat rules.
Well, if you want to get in the hat, of course you can contribute your serial killers and other interesting ideas that we could do topics on at...
Yeah, give us some non-serial killer ideas.
That'd be great. We got enough in the hat.
Mystery ones are the best.
Mysteries are cool.
But then we'll just be a mystery podcast.
Which is cool.
But I really want Dave to do the fucking Simpsons.
Well, right. It's the biggest mystery of all. Will Dave do the Simpsons? Will Dave do it? At Twitter, we are on there, of course, at Do Go On Pod. And we also tweet out photos and other silly little things that we also do on our Facebook page. So it's worth getting involved and following us there.
It's worth it.
It definitely is.
Oh,
well
yeah.
Worth it. Oh, worth the
some,
click.
There's some but it's not fire just, content.
It's not just, hey, here's the new episode. There's some other little silly things that we do in there.
Things.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, and things that we mentioned on the episode, we often do remember to post the
sometimes
photos of.
It's like we're building a little community.
Oh,
like
no.
Like a little family. Cult, yeah. That we could move to a ranch somewhere.
Ohio. It'd have That's to be Ohio. Yeah.
It has to be Ohio.
Ohio, start looking out for some ranches.
So if you could sort of... link us to any ranches that are for rent. That'd be great. Do go on pod@gmail.com is the other thing. You can get in contact with us. Or you could just say hello to us on the street. Don't do that. We are very socially awkward.
I'm jumpy.
Oh, dear. Stabbed another listener. Oh, God.
I also carry a hunting
knife. I think it's okay to say hello to Dave in the street. Okay. I don't know if at the end of this serial killer episode I want to do it, but I'm doing a fringe show this week. Tonight would have been today's the third one. This is you're listening to this the day it comes out on Wednesday.
Where can we see it, Matt? That's what we're all wanting to know.
It's on 8:30 nightly at the Courthouse Hotel, which is a cool pub in North Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of nice beers on tap, and they do cocktails. If I sell out a show, they'll name a cocktail after me for the run of the show.
Oh, that's cool.
Which hopefully I'll do one night.
They did not do that last year.
No, this is a new
thing. I think
thing.
You should ask to call it the Manson Family Mojito.
No, I don't think so.
Or the Do Go On Garita.
I think it's going to be
Do Go On Garita.
I think it's going to be named after the show, which is called Pretty Dry. So I'm pretty sure it's going to be a pretty
dry martini.
Yeah. But that's okay.
That's great.
Yeah, you guys are going to come one night, right?
We definitely are.
Absolutely.
That's going to be fun.
But once again, do not talk to us in real life.
Oh, God, don't. If you do, even if you do, like, audience participation with us, I'll get up and kill you.
I'm going to chat to you guys, for sure.
Speaking of which, how good was that tweet or Facebook comment that someone said that they thought my voice doesn't match my face?
It was on First Date with Jess.
Web series, they said I sound like a 6-foot-tall Australian surfer guy.
So one of those is right.
So come and meet me in real person.
Australian
guy.
Yeah. Australian, that's right.
And yeah, come meet Dave and be bitterly disappointed.
That's right. I'm a small, small man.
Aww.
We talk about that a lot.
I know, we do a lot. We do talk about my... But maybe they think we're being ironic. We're not.
He's small. He little.
Yeah. I'm in the corner.
Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you, or you'll hear from us next week.
For the big 50th.
Oh.
We're not doing anything special.
Aww.
So, unless...
I might bring you a cupcake.
Let's hope we don't get struck down in our prime. We'll make it to 50. Goodbye.
Bye.
Laters.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.